You're listening to the good.
Don't call me Paino.
The bad.
Absolute.
And the rugby.
Folded like a deck chair.
With Paino, Lord, and the Husk. I don't know what that means.
Hello, Dream Team. You got really... You did me.
Did he buy
while
dinner?
I was away.
I just tried to fill a hole that you sadly left as you were off gallivanting around the slopes.
Thought you did a very good job.
Thanks.
Yeah. Hello, Dream Team, and welcome to another episode of The Good, The Bad and The Rugby in partnership with City Index, the leading provider of spread betting, CFD and FX trading. We are back together. Four wheels on a car. Husk and Tins are back from their mid-season breaks. You've been moisturising quite a lot. The tan's holding up.
Yeah, a bit peely.
Bit peely.
I was a typical English man on holiday. Day one, disintegrated myself. Had 2 days. I even got to the sea in a T-shirt. 2 days out of the way.
That's nuclear zombie.
That was bad.
I did see on one of your posts, I was like, ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. I mean, but, and I was, you know what, after that, put on Factor 50 and I still developed a reasonably deep sound.
Welcome to our Rhino Bambino, Ellis Genge. Back from France at 2 a.m. last night.
No. We got back earlier than that. I just got home at about 2.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I saw Super Kev this morning, actually.
Did you?
He was up way earlier, yeah. I was up in Salford. He's obviously... the legend just keeps growing. He's now bringing the Rob Burrows Marathon to Leeds, starting and finishing Henley. They haven't had a marathon in Leeds for 22 years. It's now going to be the Rob Burrows Marathon, and Super Kev's behind it.
That's
unbelievable.
If the man doesn't get any better.
Is he running in it?
He ran a marathon last week.
He just runs it for fun now. Yeah.
What's Super Kev like? I know he's that. I know who obviously
is. This is Super Kevin Sinfield for the...
Sinfield.
Yeah, legend. Obviously off the pitch, he's a bit quiet. He's not like loud, doesn't shout much for your typical defence coach, who's usually quite abrasive. But he's one of those who holds quite a lot of weight for what he's done in rugby, on obviously the charity work and stuff.
But is he, so it's one of those defence coaches that doesn't say about smashing everyone, and you look at him and going, you've never smashed anyone.
No, because he did. His nose is pointing east, mate.
What I mean is, he was an absolute machine. What I mean is, most of the archetypal defence coaches go, you need to beat him up. And you're like, sorry, what are you going to do? You couldn't damage a salad. Relax.
What are you trying to say about Phil Larder?
Is any one of them?
Do you know why my son is the best defensive player in the world? I coached him.
That came out the other day, didn't it?
Yeah.
That Vodafone. Does he ever join in?
Yeah.
Super
yeah.
Has he still got a bit?
Not like... He sometimes stands up for a receiver and plays like if we do like drills, like off 10 and stuff, but only if, I don't know, 40 or someone's not available. But no, he's still got it.
Does Borthers ever come trundling into
We had some second rows. I can't remember what was happening. Someone was doing their laces or something, and Borth was behind me this week. And I went, Steve, come on. And he gave me the look as if to say, like, seriously? I was like, yeah, come on. And he had his moldies on. He's like, I'm in molds. I was like, that's fine. But have you seen him pat down when he used to be in camp and he used to coach us?
No.
He's pat down beyond me once before.
And?
Yeah, he was brilliant. Brilliant.
But the thing is, it'd be
better than Charlie Yule.
Well, he stayed on the field to start with. Yeah. There's a cardinal sin where some of my boarders wearing moulds. I mean, I spent every scrummaging session in moulded boots, and I used to purposely do it just to piss you lot off. You're not taking scrum seriously. You're not even wearing studs. Shut up. I don't push anyway. Studs or not, you might as well put rollerblades on. I don't care.
That'd be amazing if you were just doing that at the back.
That's what I do. Like, the whole time.
Just moonwalking. Like, yeah.
For the uninitiated, this isn't in the script, how big a difference is it wearing metal studs or moulded studs?
Huge. Oh, huge. In certain surfaces, yeah, huge. I mean, genuinely, on a Penny Hill Park, minutely manicured training surface, it doesn't really matter. That's why I just couldn't be bothered to ever wear them. And I would say that once a week, if a scrum went down, there'd be a huge row. Props would get up and go, you don't understand how important this is. You're not even fucking taking it seriously. You're wearing moulds. And I'd just be like, oh, God. And they go, you're going to take it more seriously? Like, yeah, promise you next week, whatever. Moulds on again. But then some of these lads are wearing like 20, what inch are they?
21.
21-inch studs.
No, 21 mils.
21 mils.
21-inch.
Well, you're not that dedicated.
Like, so
I saw a bloke wearing 21-inch fucking studs. You know. 21 mil studs.
Sonny Alan Partridge.
Honestly, they're like mountain...
Would you like me to dance for you?
They're like mountain crampons. You know, mountaineering crampons. They're so big and they look so painful. And on these new modern crappy boots that like fold up with absolutely no support, after a while you see like just two 21 mil studs poking out the side of a boot.
That's true.
Horrific. And they all look like, they all literally look like they've got stones in their shoes. They're running around like, but they're really good at scrummaging at the time that nobody cares about.
For the 10 scrums in the 80 minutes.
And you probably don't even want to wear them, do you? Because you've got, you like a bit of dynamic footwork.
Yeah, well, if I could wear lesser studs and scrum well, I would, I don't think you can.
If you haven't got your tickets for our tour yet, this is the quality content that you can pay additional pennies to come and listen to. I've got lots to talk to you about, actually, but very quickly, by the time this comes out, there will be 9 days until our first show.
Yes.
Are we ready?
Yes, we are.
Are we?
Are we not? I was very excited about the tour. I cannot wait. 16 dates, starting in Sheffield, an opportunity to meet all the incredible fans that we have built up over the last kind of two seasons who have never met most of us.
You don't like our fans.
No, I know, but I'll be on a stage and they won't have access to me.
Talking down to them, so they'll be very happy.
My favourite thing, there'll be a velvet rope and security guards. They can't get near me, but I'll be able to impart some knowledge. We've got some stories, got some amazing guests, got some incredible interactions to have, and we've done about 80% of the tickets as well, which is unheard of. So there are, I think there's a smidge more for a couple of venues like Edinburgh, the heartland of rugby. We've got one of your favourite sons, the old Hamish Watson, in the mix. Yeah. And you know, so I don't know why you haven't bought them. And also Liverpool. I know we're not football, but we're just as funny.
Yeah. If not more funny.
If not more interesting.
We actually do get injured for a living and actually do tell funny stories and fight and hard. I don't know where I'm going with this. But what I was going to say is...
That was fucking weird.
It was weird, wasn't it? I thought I had a point, but I didn't have a point.
Were you trying to make a point about footballers falling over and faking
it? About the Ronaldo
thing? I actually really
wanted to help you, but there was nothing
I could do. Just to completely segue away from that and realise what the hell was that. Don't listen to that. Please edit it out so it's not, they don't think that's the type of content that's coming. I've done like a little mini tour of late around our venues. I was in Liverpool at the weekend for the Grand National. And then I drove through Sheffield on my way up to my mum and dad's house, and then drove across to Manchester last night to be with Supercab this morning. So, and then drove back through Oxford this morning.
You've done a recce for us.
I have literally done a
recce. How did you get on in Aintree?
Not very well, actually.
Did you not?
No.
Well done, Sam Whaley.
I mean,
you're all there or not?
No. Mumbag Dude did parade on Thursday, but he's well retired now. He's an old boy, but he paraded on.
That's the way people describe me halfway through my career.
it was tough. It was hard to win up at Aintree this year. I mean, yeah, Sam Whaley, fair play
yourself.
To him.
Did you ever go right?
Cleaned up, yeah.
Did you?
What?
Did, yeah. Santini each way in the Grand National. Who did I have? I laid Edward Stone to lose.
Did you do that? I didn't know you
could
do that.
Yeah.
You can bet on them to not win.
Yeah, and he was 1.5 on favourite on it. So.
You only do it for a really short favourite.
Yeah,
like
you wouldn't do it for like a 2-1 or a 3-1, but he was like, what was he, 1 point?
I love how you know all the terminology. Oi, mean streets of Bristol, isn't it, teaching you? What do you spend the winnings on? I imagine more video gaming gear and extensions of that video gaming chair.
Well, I've spent it, yeah.
More tracksuits?
I haven't bought a tracksuit in ages.
Oh, you should get the free ones, don't you?
No, this is pay good money for that, the same as you did for the Gears Off Tie.
Off Tie? What?
RPS shopping.
What's that? Oh, yeah.
Nice. I had to let you don't know. I'm like, you buy everything.
Sorry, I didn't know we were revealing that online,
No, I haven't bought a trackie in ages. I don't know what to spend it on. Save it, I guess.
We've got trackies available on our merch list.
GBR ones
coming, yeah. We'll get you kitted out.
Oh, mate, what do they look like? Are they all right?
He's been colouring in the paperwork.
So they're really odd-shaped. They're super tight.
Real loose on the thighs, but they're tight on the ankles.
We have got Ben Kayser joining us in Oxford, Hamish Watson, as you said, in Edinburgh, Scott Cornell in Cardiff. That's going to be noisy. Nick Easter in Newcastle, Mark Quaid in Manchester, Jiffy is coming to Swansea. So Rory Best in Dublin, Jeremy Guskett in Bath, and you're going to dip into Nottingham. Are you ready?
Yeah. When is it?
That's reassuring.
I'll be there. Look, my schedule's not very busy.
We'll get our people to call your people.
Do you have a Steph like Hasty, or you just don't know your schedule? And...
No, I don't have a PA at all. I just go on. As soon as someone tells me something, boom, go onto calendar, type it in, and then it gives me a 2-day reminder.
Oh, nice.
So, I like that.
Yeah, it's well organized. Good stash.
We are going to have a lot of fun. I think as much fun, actually, in terms of the content we create around the shows as the shows themselves. But if you would like to come and join us, there are not many tickets left. We'd love to see you there. Have a little look at goodbadrugby.com. And yeah, it's
going to be. My mum wants to come to the Nottingham one.
Oh, it's the 11th of May. The 11th of May is the Nottingham one.
Nice. Mrs. Genge is in.
She's in.
VIP tickets.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Your mum.
She gets one to one with Hask.
She's very fit.
Well, I look at her and go, God, I didn't know you brought your sister, really.
Yeah, you were. I get that a lot. Yeah. Fair play.
Wait, but in the background like that, stop making jokes. The
eyes have changed.
Yeah, Alice has gone seething again.
just be you and me on stage. Just to wrestle like in the aisle.
Butt heads.
Oh, the big yawn. Oh, Mrs. Genge, hi. Take your hand off my mum. Sorry.
Sheffield, London, Birmingham, Bath and Southend also on the list. Head to goodbadrugby.com to get your tickets. How was the journey back last night? Let's start at the end.
Of the game?
Yeah. Did you go there expecting to beat Clermont, as you did?
Yeah, of course. Well, I expected to... Yeah. I wanted to win. It's tough, isn't it? You go there and, yeah, you can't necessarily say, oh, I expect to win, because you're not expected to win against away in France, against this French team. I've seen with Quinns, that Quinns struggled. Did any English teams besides us win in France the weekend? La Rochelle done Bordeaux.
Yeah, quite they did badly. A proper job on them.
Mate, French league's mental. What's their cap? Like 15.5 mil?
Yeah.
Yeah, ours is 5.2 or something at the moment, isn't it? So it's
tough. Always a salary cap with you, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's a massive problem, boys. It's a massive problem. We've got one squad and we're also trying to compete in the domestic comp and do Premiership Cup, and we've got like 40 players. They've got loads of players.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And they're all mint. So it's tough for us to juggle like what we're doing, whether or not you put all your eggs in one basket with the Europe or the Prem, and yeah, so fuck off.
Oh, right.
Just because you're retired, it does not bother you anymore.
No, don't you dare. I am a massive advocate. I fight the good fight for you lads. I fight the good fight for you lads all the time.
No, but they're obviously giants, and the French leagues have always been known to have like superstar players, and I'm not saying we haven't got superstars, but It's a bit daunting that you go over there and you hear about all the big names like Ed Fofana.
You obviously didn't watch that meeting we had with Brett Gosper, former head of World Rugby, and Mark.
No, I did.
Mark Evans, and I went in hard.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, I did. I'm all about the boys. Pay more cash. Stop fucking about. But you know we can't. They can't
pay more cash or play less games.
They can't organise anything. They can't even organise a global season. So I just wouldn't even bother. Don't even worry about it.
You're right. I always do bring up the money. Let's not talk about the money.
Tell us about the changing room, because actually you've had a remarkable season.
Changing room's nice.
Yeah, lovely furnishings.
If you had more money, your less changing room would be nicer, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Tell us about what that win does for you at this point.
Nothing really, because obviously you remember when Sarries played them and it snowed, they cancelled the game, played the day after, not on TV, and Raka came out and absolutely ran amok, scored 3 tries in 20 minutes or something. So, mate, they got deadly, deadly players. So even though you've got a 19-0 lead coming back to Welford Road, I don't think anyone's sitting there thinking, yeah, this is done and dusted. It's a good position to be in, although I probably thought we should have scored a few more.
Love it. Do you like these back-to-back games? Is there a little bit?
No.
No, you don't?
No, I don't like the aggregate. I think, like,
God, the
for me,
fans love them.
Yeah, because it's more games. Oh. And it's more suspense. But for me, it's like, we've worked this hard, we won our group. I don't want to go into a last 16 and play 2 legs. I want to go to the quarterfinals, semis, and the finals.
They've basically given up the league. The little league structures where you play home and away to get the best teams to go through and then have a knockout. Instead, they've just transferred the
knockout. So if we would have lost to Clermont, it would have meant absolutely nothing that we finished top of the table. You know?
All they've guaranteed is the best teams will play each other twice rather than having maybe, you know, your pointless zebra game.
Exactly.
And also, twice. I imagine, like, you're kind of got a general surly demeanour, as it was anyway.
What does that mean, surly?
Surly, just kind of mildly abrasive. You're kind of like, I wouldn't say you're like a ray of sunshine unless, you know. Yeah, look how sunshiny you are. This is like a miniature cloud. The emotion pouring. Yeah.
We see the one in, what's the character called in, everyone's watching in Kanto now, who's got kids, the one that follows around, there's a rain cloud above it.
That's, his name's Charlie, isn't it? That little kid who wears the yellow and black jumper.
He controls the animals, doesn't he?
I don't know where you're going with this now.
No, but what basically is you look miserable, is what I was trying to say, but actually you're lovely.
You know, I got told that. It really hit me the other week. Someone said to me, what did they say? We're having a pint or whatever, and they said, oh, what's wrong with you? I said, there's nothing wrong with me. They said, well, you look miserable. I said, well, everyone always says that to me. And he said, well, you probably look fucking miserable. Yeah. And it really hit me. I do look miserable a lot. No, but I'm not, like, I'm happy. You just ain't smiling. No, no. Do you know what I mean?
Now he's trying to smile. He's like,
yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
But it looked awkward. he hasn't used those muscles in so long.
Do you know
long.
What
like,
I mean?
I think it's great. I walk around like that all the time. Everyone would be like, this bloke is fucking weird. He's lost the plot.
You look quite intimidating. So when I told you the first time I met you, you look very intimidating, a bit like Dredrick Tatum. You've got the surly demeanor, but inside you're like, you might be like a sunflower, but at the moment you look like a rainy Scottish island just full of misery.
Yeah, I got on a tube today. Obviously, I don't go on the tube much. Edgware Road, and I was changing, obviously, to get here to Parsons Green. There's the, you know, the metal benches, four seats on them, obviously. Yeah. So I sat down, there's four there. I sat down on that one. A bloke was sat there, and he put his green rucksack there, right? I sat on that one. As soon as I sat down, he went, fuck off, stood up, took his rucksack, walked to the other side of the platform, and I was like, geez, he couldn't be talking to me, like... And I was like, what's wrong, mate? And he didn't reply. And I was like, all right, nothing, leave it. I ain't bothered. He's obviously pissed up or something. And he was on the other side of the platform again. And then he turned around and he went, leave me alone. I'm like, mate, I'm not even talking to you. Like, leave me alone. Do you know, like,
that's London.
I must just piss people off.
Yeah, no, but I think what I was trying to get with it is that it's very hard to know what mood you're in. But obviously, as you start talking, your charm and lovely persona comes through. Mm. But what I was saying with the back-to-back, with the back-to-back games... Surely, it, obviously, going away to Claremont is a horrifically physical occasion. You're probably feeling a bit battered now and quite tired.
Yeah.
And then you know that you're going to have to climb another mountain, and that emotional journey you're going to have to make to play at Welford Road this week is going to be utter carnage.
Yeah, then you've got Quinn's week after.
So I just wanted to know what the psychological point of view. Like, A, how do you feel? Yeah. B, like, it's not just a back-to-back, but it's almost like, Christ, give us a week to play somebody else to refresh before we have to run into brick walls.
That's what I mean. Obviously, they're going to be absolutely mustard to score 19 points and then start from scratch. So, yeah, in terms of the emotional side of thing, I think, like, at the end of the game, we'd said, like, boys, don't jump up and down cheering now because it really is not over. Although that sounds like a bit of a killjoy, but it's not, is it? It's really not, and weirder things have happened. So emotionally, yeah, we'll come in. We've got training tomorrow. We're in 3 days this week, so we're doing Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We usually do two on, one off, one on, one off play. But we're doing 3 days this week, having a bit more recovery, like ice baths and all that. So yeah, we'll be fresh. We'll be fresh for the weekend, but I'd just wait and see.
Just also, from, I just think, quick off the top of my head, before anyone, from a marketing point of view, maybe we should get a T-shirt with "I'm smiling inside,"
and then I'm smiling on the inside.
That could be his GBNR T-shirt.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, smiling on the inside.
Little rainbow over the top.
Yeah.
Well, no, that sends different signals. Yeah. He might get some more attention.
2022.
Well, he might get some more social media for us.
He might do.
Can you talk us through the try?
Yeah, the 1 meter try. Half a meter.
One for the show, reel.
Yeah. I carried the first pick and go, and then someone else done a second. But I was at the bottom of the ruck, like trapped under someone, and someone shouted, "Genji, fucking go!" So I just jumped up, picked the ball up, and the kiddie, I think, went too low, and he like hit my laces, but he obviously didn't realise I'm 6'4". So I stretched out over the line and dotted down.
Love it. Do you like scoring pies?
Yeah, so I don't really get much of a buzz from it. If it's like a...
You celebrate like you do. Yeah.
No, I didn't. Yesterday, I just got up and just went and just walked off.
You actually do celebrate more for other people. Oh,
that's true.
I get buzzing when I see
Jack Willis try. Yeah. It's
but that's because I roomed with him in the week and he said something about like, geez, boy, I've always dreamed of like playing for England, blah, 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 how good of it to score a try. I was like, I'll drive you over tomorrow. And I latched him over a line, so I was like, that's mint.
Yeah, but I've seen the other ones, the other clips of, I was watching some highlights of Leicester play. Must have not anything else on TV. But I was having a weak moment into rugby. And you celebrate mad. Why did you do that? Why did you love it so much? Because you've got that camaraderie.
Yeah, we got so many young, and we never used to do it ever at Leicester, ever. And the Chiefs boys used to do it, and I used to love watching them do it. And I thought, well, I'd love to have that at the club. And also, we've got so many young boys coming through, like Freddie Stewart, obviously, we had on the show. And like these boys, their first sort of seasons in the Premiership is like senior players, and they're scoring all these tries. And I just think they should just celebrate them. Like, it's class. You don't get to score many tries, do you, James?
No, you don't. They actually used to do it at Leicester. But all those players that used to do it, Jono put them through a wood chipper out the back. Anyone that had any emotion.
Did they celebrate back in Leicester?
No, but anyone who did would get filled in by Dorian West. Banished, not Dorian West, he didn't fill anyone in. But you know what I mean? Like all the
We try not to be too, like, I don't know what the word is, like over the top in people's faces, but we like to celebrate with each other.
On the
Sometimes you're blowing after a scrum that, yeah.
On the Maratoji scale, if one being normal and Marrow being 10, where would you say
we're at? Six.
It's important to celebrate life's little moments.
Definitely.
Well done to you and your boys. Dare I ask, do you think you can win it?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You looking at a double?
So we want to win everything. We never go out thinking we're going to lose. But
how remarkable an achievement would it be for an English club to do a double?
Exeter done it twice. Brilliant. They did it twice? They did double twice?
No, they did it. I think they did it once.
Sarri's done it twice.
But I was thinking more the diminishing salary cap.
Right. Yeah, that's on. Well, again, I don't really want to revert to money, but it would be nuts for this year for an English club to do a double, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
No, well, not necessarily English. Yeah, no, it would. No, yeah. It'd be mental. But those French clubs are flying as well. I think we're at Clermont like 8th or 9th.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of those other clubs are like
Toulouse.
Toulouse and that. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like they are, and obviously they got half the French squad as well. Got DuPont, all those boys.
So. And now they've broken a 12-year hoodoo. They're all absolutely
what's
beyond
12-year hoodoo? Yeah.
You know, like they couldn't win a Grand Slam for 12 years.
Oh, right, yeah.
And they, you know, they waited for that second coming and they actually haven't, they didn't choke. All of them are in the form of their lives. All of them are young and all of them are on fire. You know what I mean? That is kind of quite a nice melting point. Pop, plus all the cash, plus all the, you know.
I think we're different though. I do think we're a different type of team like Leicester. I think you can, like, when teams are firing and stuff, I think we get that. Obviously, because of all the rich history we've got in the competition. I think when you talk about like those European titles and stuff, it probably brings a bit of a different mindset for teams when they play us.
What is Borthwick, because obviously I had Borthwick with England, but I haven't seen him at the club. What would he say before a game like Clermont? Is he a screamer, a shouting?
What did he say? He fired up a bit this week. He doesn't usually like go nuts, but he fired up a little bit. More so touched on like where we've been. Leicester as a club for the last 5 years, we haven't really been in any big trophies, and today's a big game. And he was like, this is where this team should be. You've worked hard for it and don't miss the opportunity. It wasn't like inch by inch. It wasn't one of them, but probably saving that for next week.
He turned a tiny bit whimsical post-match. He said, not now, but one day I might look back on a result like this and get, you know, a warm feeling.
Well, that's what Steve's like. He don't give off much emotion. I'm sure you've seen that as well. But yeah, he does sometimes have those little grins and you wonder what he's grinning about. And
because he is actually really quite an emotional guy. I think he is. He's a real sweetheart. He cares.
He really cares. And that's why I've got so much time for the bloke. And that's why the club's doing so well, because he really cares about Archie Vaines, the academy hooker who couldn't throw anything. Like, oh, he was a hooker, he just couldn't throw at all. And now he's like, yeah, like 11 from 11 the other week and the champ for knots. Like, and that's all down to Arch as well. But Steve, like, just he's just so good at developing characters, you know.
Would he ever have a cup of coffee with us?
No, not a chance.
I played with him since I was 16.
But now you're media and you come with a microphone. I'm not sure that he.
I don't know if he likes you.
It's very possible.
I don't know if he likes you. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Very possible.
Do you know
We gave him a lot of shit for a long period.
He probably don't like you. Yeah. Yeah.
He likes me.
I think he likes you.
He's weird because Steve usually gets on with characters who are quite different to him. He likes people who are quite loud and.
Does he?
He likes Marlo, yeah.
Does he?
Yeah, he gets more Joe. He likes
Haskell. He was always lovely to me. I've always said this. You know, with Eddie and obviously his success in that initial period, Steve was down to 90% of him because no one else put the hard work in, determination, player development.
Well, he said that about the Lions as well.
Yeah,
he'd never tell you about it either, which is something obviously you've got to respect.
On that Lions tour midweek, if he wasn't there and put the work in, the whole tour would have been an absolute sham. Well, it's a disservice to those guys, but you know, we wouldn't have had the care and attention that we deserve.
All I know is he never drank because his body was in such bad shape. His drainage, his lymphatic drainage was so bad that if he drank, his legs just swelled up to the size of Professor Clumps. So whenever we're on a team social, he had to drink full fat Coke and protein bars. That was all.
But I've also got another theory, is that, you know, there's people that don't drink. I reckon Borthwick, if you actually got him smashed up, might turn into an absolute machine.
His favourite film is Old School.
And I think he might be like
that.
We used to say when he was at Bath that he'd literally come in, do all this thing, he'd do an hour of stretching, an hour of
fire ups,
all that sort of stuff, and then he'd just go home. We just think he'd go home and he must just go in and start drinking whiskey.
Yeah. You know, Borthwick is so pedantic on obviously the line outs, like he lives and breathes it. I obviously in his mind was so bad that he went through the side of trying to bollock me to like basically helping me. He was, you know what I mean? He was just such a nice guy. And he was like, oh, God, just stand there, Hask, out of the way. He was like so sweet about it. So you just come with me. And don't bother about the sheets and all the confusing things. Just stand there and do that. Lift me when I tell you. I was like, thanks, Steve.
That's a challenge. Brilliant. I'd love to have a chat with him. Do you want a quick squiz through some of the others? Quinn's came back against Montpellier. That's still alive.
But that's a vital one for them in terms of.
I got told they were 34-0 down.
They were.
Yeah.
40-26 final score.
40-26. So
they are mad. Quinn's. It is a mad team to follow.
Yeah. And they could have scored a couple more as well. Quinn's. All the way back. Yeah. I mean, when I started watching it and I had to turn it off, and they literally were camped for the first 15 minutes in the Montpellier half. So
what happened then?
I don't know. There was a couple of interceptions, but then and a couple of breakaway Montpellier tries, but they were just cutthroat. And I turned back on, it was 24-0 at half time. I was like, well, I'm definitely going to watch the second half because this is typical Quinn's. Then Montpellier scored straight off the bat, and then the comeback started. And as soon as they scored one, you just see their whole, they go, okay, this is on.
I didn't see it, but I spoke to Marcus last night at Texan after we finished our game. I said, I've seen the game, like, what happened sort of thing. He's like, mate, we were just off it in the first half. Like, yeah. I said, look, if there's a team who's going to come back and score another 40 points.
I spoke to Danny Kerr, and he was like, mate, honestly, we just make life so hard for ourselves. Yeah. It's like amazing. If we actually just applied that commitment and that attention to detail at the right time, we'd smash anyone.
Wouldn't be in that situation.
Yeah, we just keep giving up and then go, oh, God. Oh, and actually then turn it on.
Yeah, they played quite an aggressive, proper aggressive old Wasp type defence where they just flew up.
And Montpellier.
It caused them a few problems, but they figured it out.
Did you make of Zach Mercer?
Played well, didn't he?
Good man of the match, didn't he?
Yeah, he played well.
Star of the match.
Scored two.
Star.
I mean, he is quite bright on brand.
Have they changed star?
Heineken.
Yeah.
He did play well. Fair play.
He was a great player. I thought Zach Mercer was always a good player.
Nice kiddie as well. Yeah,
nice. Always a nice guy. Shared a room with him in Brighton.
Media are talking about him now getting in England. No chance.
Interesting to watch that space. Leinster too strong in Connacht. La Rochelle far too strong for Bordeaux Begler. Brizzle Sale. Did you watch any of that?
Nope.
I'm not sure many people. You did?
Yeah.
Well done. You get a medal for that.
Do you watch this thing with Bristol at the moment and how you're flying? Any regrets?
No. obviously, I went back for very different reasons to rugby, so it's not. I don't watch the results and think, oh no.
Fine. Again, emotional
response. They won.
They've lost a million games. Oh no.
But I've got a lot of mates there. So, whenever Joyce is captain at the moment. So, I really enjoy someone who I've known since I was 16.
The old
watching him.
King of binges.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this is class. Someone who came from Southmead from absolutely nothing. Similar story to myself, captaining his own town club in Europe. I just think it's mint. So, I really enjoy watching it.
Good win for them.
What you're saying, is there a cash amount that Leicester can get you back? Is that a ship has sailed?
Clause 42.
Clause 42, section 5, the Johnny May clause.
No, I'm at a no.
Right, okay. But what you're saying is there's a chance if fourth and stuff.
You're saying it?
Yeah.
I mean, he's heading home because there's a direct train from Bristol to London to get
there's a direct train from Leicester to St. Pancras. Hour and five.
That's tiny.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Hell of a win for Ulster.
Yeah, that red card after. Yeah.
What was that red card?
Still a hell of a win.
To lose a 7-0 after 7 minutes and then a red card at 8 minutes. And
did you see those other red cards this weekend? There were some mental ones.
What about the one in your game?
That was tough. Like the sun, I know it didn't look it on the. I know it sounds like an absolute terrible excuse, but we played away from the sun first half. Obviously, you've seen us putting the spiral bombs up on Matsushima and stuff because the sun was literally beaming down. And then when we played that way, I think Guy, he's good indeed. Like he's a good defender.
Yeah,
he like ran up to get in the passing channel and didn't realize Fritz Lee was coming on like a hard line, and the sun was like gleaming real bad, and I think he just didn't see him and just went boof. But like, imagine on the pitch, you've done it before, and you like ran head on head in someone,
the post.
Do you know what I mean? but exactly. If that was a person, that is what's happened. But because they had the ball, he got red carded. I got asked after, do I think it was a red? I said, well, head on head, so probably. But upon reflection, like, I don't know.
How does Guy Porter feel off the back of that?
He felt all right, actually. He passed his HIA.
Good, but in terms of
in terms of the red, I don't know. I haven't gone into too much detail. When someone gets because it's a bit different.
Well, we've just been talking a lot about it, about the moving parts in a game. I just was interested, as you know,
He felt so difficult.
I think he felt a bit hard done by because he had no intention to even tackle the bloke, let alone.
And what point did you make that made up excuse about the sunlight?
No, I made that excuse.
Oh, right, fine. That's for him. Because I quite like that as, you know, blaming me for running into the post. It was the sun. Well, James, it was a closed stadium roof in Cardiff at night. Sorry, Your Honour.
And your glasses.
And I was, yeah. So, but I will get you to represent me next time. But he didn't turn around and go, well, the sun, that's used.
No, I just went over to the ref, said, look, the sun's gleaming down, blah, blah, blah. But they were having none of it.
What was Yulesy like, by the way, after the England game? Because I haven't done a show since.
He's obviously gutted, mate. But I just said to him, look, mate, like everyone knows you didn't mean get sent off, and he's all right, isn't he?
That's sort of become your role a little bit. Like we talked to a lot of players, kind of about. And actually, when we talked to Eddie and Dr. Boyes, they've kind of said your role is kind of a bit more of an emotional leader in that. Obviously, we know what you're doing at Leicester, but England, kind of put your arm around people, kind of making sure that people feel they can be themselves, they can be honest. Are you doing that on purpose, especially with someone like Charlie Yules, trying to make sure he's okay?
I've known Yulesy since I was 16 as well. So, like, I played all the age group stuff with him. I've never been best mates with the bloke, but, like, we know each other reasonably well, like, emotionally on and off the pitch. And obviously, I've been in that setup since 2016, so a bit sooner than him, so I know the older boys as well. So I just tried to get to know the young boys now. I know the sort of my age, sort of like 26, 27-year-olds, and then the older boys. So, yeah, it's easy for me to sort of just dot around and pick people up. And, like, when someone suffers, when something like that happens, you obviously think that's the end of the world because ultimately, well, who knows what would have happened. But we put up a good fight, but it's very hard with 14 from a minute in. So he would have felt terrible, I'm sure. But he had a beer on that after and he said bye and that was it.
Do you think, obviously, with the red card in the Southern Hemisphere in the 20 minutes and then bringing another guy on, do you think that's the right thing to do up here?
So I was always against that. And then upon reflection, after seeing something like that, Guy Porter's, I think if there is absolutely no malice and no intention to actually really hurt someone for a high tackle, because like you said, there's a lot of moving parts, I do think potentially someone should be able to come back on. How long that would be off the pitch, I don't know.
Because I don't think there should be... What do you usually get? 3 weeks off the back of it.
Three
I don't
games,
think you should get banned either. I think you're getting punished by going off in the first minute of your international. That is a punishment for a player in enough.
Oh, he'd care a lot more about that than missing 3 games for Bath.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think he'd be happy to get banned by Bath playing on there. But we can't say that, can you?
You can't say that.
If I was playing for Bath, I would have gone to my car and got a shooter and shot someone just to get out of playing for them.
Every 78th minute of every international.
Gosh.
Yeah. 3 weeks off? Thank you, sir.
It was without getting into the detail, it was a hell of a day that at Twickenham. Can you remember the sort of, obviously you're gutted because you've lost it, but do you remember the emotions off the back of that one?
Yeah, yeah. What was the chat going through? Because obviously you then start winning momentums, didn't you, for such a period of time. The defence really got on top. And you could just see, did you notice the crowd, how much they got into it?
Yeah, we thought we were going to win. Phenomenal. You know, like we said, as soon as he went off, I got everyone in and I just said, boys, we train with 13 people every week. Do you know what I mean? We train with 13. We train with two men down every week for situations like that. And I said, this is what we prep for. So we got two choices. We can either fly into it or roll over and get 40 points put on us. And although they didn't get too far off for 68 minutes, like, we had a really good opportunity to win that game. I think it was 15-0 up until 68. Yeah. And then that was it.
I know you're kind of built of the sporting mentality, like all of us kind of were, in terms of, you know, what you did today is never good enough. You're always in the pursuit of next, next, and next. If you cast your mind back to when we were talking about during that sort of pandemic, and, you know, you were apparently setting up that the next union, you were concerned about pay, concerned about that, and you sort of put a big target on your back, and we had that conversation with you saying, look, you know, you do know you're putting more pressure, and you were like, right, this is the right thing to do. And then you fast forward, you know, past that Six Nations, where ultimately that was one of the best games, I think, you know, in terms of where you scrummed, where you played against Ireland and put your head above the parapet. And then obviously finishing Six Nations, one of the players earmarked by England, absolute star, both on and off the field. Is it amazing how it moves on? Do you appreciate the journey you're on at the moment? Do you take a pinch of salt with it, or do you, you know, you're just quite chilled?
It might have been Eddie who said it to me, but you never get time to sit down. I think he told me about a book, and basically one of the things was you never get time to sit down, stop, and really appreciate your career until the end. So I'm not thinking about anything at all, really.
But do you really genuinely? Because you are playing some of the finest rugby of your career.
And I'm not. I won't sit here and say fucking hell, I hate here and that, blah blah blah, because you enjoy getting your tires pumped up. Everyone does, but like, I don't sit there at any time and think, right, I'm the best, blah 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 blah. Like, I don't ever think today I'm going to be the best. But like, I think for me, I've got a decent amount of natural genetic ability, and I feel if I apply myself in the week, learn my stuff, do all my prep, which I've been really emphasising for the past few months, and it's worked. It's worked.
Do you think that's combined as well with all that, with the maturity and the in terms of your leadership stuff on the field, giving that responsibility seems to have brought the best out?
Well, it was discipline, mate. It was discipline. So, like, I used to go to bed at 3 o'clock in the morning, thought I had insomnia, would take, like, tablets to go to sleep and all that sort of stuff, and I'd be like, yeah, can't sleep, need the pill, blah, blah. But really, what I was doing, I was just staying up gaming all the time. I was, like, being honest, I was just gaming, having coffees at 8 o'clock, you know, just because like you're in camp and you can. And I thought, right, you know what, I'm going to go to bed at 10, get in bed at 10, be in bed by 10:30, like that's early for me.
Pulled the end of it off a couple of times.
Well, no, I stopped.
Did you?
I stopped masturbating, yeah.
Jesus.
I know this is probably not the time to tell you.
We are a show for all shapes and sizes.
So Mike Tyson, I think he went 6 months. I went 6 months without fornicating. So I seen that, and then I've done a lot of studies on under blood tests, seeing testosterone levels, and apparently you get 140% increase in testosterone if you don't ejaculate for 7 days. So yeah, I didn't wank all week.
Jesus, Matt, I've
got my fight in 10 days. That's me cutting my hands off.
Cooks, sorry, love.
So, yeah, that
it's just
actually,
got dry in your
ribs. One thing, if I'm being honest. Yeah,
the sleep and the not knocking one out and everything else, and just a bit of discipline.
It was discipline. So I was up at 6 o'clock every single morning myself. Nolsey sinks not towards the end, his back with some bits. He'd be doing his own bits, but he'd still be up at 6. Me and Nolsey were next door. Sinks, Nolsey, me, Dickie. I can't remember who came in with me. Launchers came in me after that. But I was up at 6, straight down to the spa. We do 15 minutes of sauna, straight into the ice bath, plunge, hold my breath under there for 10 seconds, come out, do some breathing, back in the sauna, plunge, do some breathing, boom, start my day, go down early for training, do all my stretching, all my activation, do sleds, and I'd never done any of this, right? And I was like, fucking hell, this is so boring. Like, because I get bored, and that's why I don't do it. I'd rather be up having a coffee and a bit of banter with the boys. But then I'd done all this stuff, and because I was in camp, it's a bit easier. It's not easy still at home.
No.
Because you've got the babby, you've got the missus, you've got all that sort of stuff. But when I was in camp, I thought, I've got nothing else to do except for game. So I left my laptop at home. And yeah, I'd done all right against Wales with it. That was only 3 days of no masturbation. And then I went the full week against Ireland, and that happened. And then I went the full week against France, and I didn't do it last week.
When you were a bit slower running from fullback, you were carrying a bit. Not the baby rider who's had some swingers for his shorts.
Yeah. That is amazing, though, with the kind of that approach and the discipline stuff, and almost like a later lesson. Do you now take that as a framework going, right, not jokes aside about the masturbation thing, but in terms of the discipline going,
it's not
right,
a joke, James.
No, I know that. But what I mean is in terms of like your key golden pillars, that might be quite transitory as a mindset.
Even so that's what it's one of them, isn't it? Like, I could have went at it every single day, 5 times a day, and I could have played the same. But because I disciplined myself. I didn't want to do it. I was making sure, even though I didn't want to get about it, I woke up at 6 o'clock and be like, oh, I just want to go back to bed. But I'd go and do it. It would make me think, right, well, you've done all this now. You've got to turn up. Like, you've got no excuses.
That's how I based my entire career on that mentality. Yeah. Actually just going, right, what do I need to do? Go and do it. And you just derive confidence from it. Yeah. So is that now your framework?
Yeah, you do get confidence from it. You do. Like, on match day, sometimes I'd be jogging around and be like, fuck, I feel terrible. But then, like, when I was doing that, I was like, I have done everything I need to do. There's nothing more I could have done. Left every stone unturned, and boom, I'm ready. And that was my mindset when I was.
Just to be clear, I shagged Bird once in the day of a game, and I got man of the match. It doesn't really
matter.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Don't really matter.
It potentially means nothing.
It does actually, but good discipline.
Yeah.
Do you feel in a very different place on the pitch now?
Probably from after 2020, when we had that like terrible Six Nations and stuff. After that, yeah, I probably had to like. I felt like I wasn't in the game enough. So that's another thing that I've been working on, is like getting involved more. But like I said to you earlier, like, I'm not thinking about it too much. I'm just, as cliche as it is, just next job. I want to beat Claremont next week. After that, whoever we got, Quinns, then Bristol, back to Europe. I just want everything. Let's just go.
Does confidence as well come from the fact that you are now established? You sort of expect to be in the England, well, not expect, you know, but expect,
I know what you mean.
But
no,
you're confident in if you're playing well, that's going to come. You're comfortable in your environment of where you are at Leicester, what your role is there, and that also along with all the prep stuff that you're doing. That
yeah,
that,
the prep's puzzles. Definitely the biggest one. I'm being genuine when I say this. I am never comfortable. I have been comfortable at Leicester, but since Steve's been, I'm not comfortable that I'm going to play every week. Sometimes he might say, right, this week I feel this is the right way to go. I'd rather have you off the bench. And you've seen that with Ben Young. He's been on the bench a few times, and Coley and the other boys in England. I don't think any of us are ever comfortable in terms of selection, but it drives performance and training. So that's the method behind it. And we've all invested into that. And our training's a very, very high quality training environment. And that's why we do it.
Interesting. Is there any part of you that's got any interest, given the coaches you're working with? Is the seed of coaching growing?
For me?
Yeah.
Do I want to coach?
Yeah.
No.
Never.
I won't say never, but right now, no. All I want to do is play.
Yeah, sure. I just what interesting because you talk more about the coaches and what you're learning, and it's been really noticeable that, about your sort of interest in what you're doing beyond just
for life. Life and other prospects and stuff. So I went into business and done some other bits with people, and I've learned a lot from the people that I work with, Steve, Eddie, those boys that are very, I don't know what the word is, mechanical, like they're like machines.
Yeah,
they?
Yeah.
Like I've learned a lot from them. But no, I don't feel like I do. I do individual coaching. If someone said, so Richard Hill said there was this boy, Tariq, I think his name was, he was at London Irish, he moved to Lucid from number 8, struggling with scrummaging. So I gave him a phone call and gave him some tips and stuff. But I know this sounds quite selfish. I haven't got the energy to be ringing up loads of people all the time, like doing that. So if someone asks, then yeah, I'll give them
It was more just sort of, I mean, you are so switched on and so interested in everything around you. I just wondered whether, you know, as you work with Eddie and Steve Borthwick and Kevin Sinfield, whether there's a seed that's growing.
Potentially, I'm not aware of it. Yeah, it might be in the back of my head somewhere. But like, yeah, with Kev, like Kev cares so much. Like he's always got a smile on his face, and he comes in, pats you on the back with everything. Even when you do something bad, you know, like he makes you feel good about yourself. He's got a real good tendency for that. Like halftime, Steve said to me, like, look, you were the blip in defence in that first half. You got to pull your finger out, and I was like, all right, boom. And I went out and started slotting a few boys. So like, they're very clever people. So like, that will stick with me now. The way he got that out of me, you know.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't happen very often. That you'll find a coach.
Yeah, but it's understanding personality.
He some understands need, me so well.
Chris needs a little hug and a rub on. I was a bit like you. I always needed someone to fire me up a little bit and go, actually, you know, you realise you missed that tackle.
Want to give him a rub on
the bottom. That's all I can think about.
Give him a rub on the bottom half as we're going to go off.
I played at Newcastle once, and we never won at Newcastle. We were always crap. And Dean Ryan came in and did the old thing where he's running, he fucking hoed the Lucozade bottles and nearly broken his foot. You could see it visually, the pain that he had in his foot as he's walking around. He's like, none of you give a shit. And I was like, then Tom May made a line break, and it was one of those where he's getting a pass. He's inside someone getting a pass that way, and I'm coming the other way. So he's getting the pass that way, and I'm coming from the other side. He's got no idea I'm coming. Yeah. And it was one that didn't hurt him, but he was laughing because we both basically did forward somersaults in the air and landed, and he was laughing. I was like, sorry, mate, Dean got into me. But that is what makes a good coach, is when you've got to treat everyone differently.
That was Steve's, probably wouldn't, like Steve would tell you himself, that's probably something that he needed to work on, was understanding people. Because he's obviously always been so organised himself and so on it himself that he needed to probably understand the squad a bit more. And that was why we worked so well together, because I'd say, look, this guy needs that, this guy needs this. And he'd come to me and say, do you think blah, blah, blah. And yeah, he's very, very understanding now. And it shows, I guess, because the squad's firing.
Do you think with the stuff around kind of when you were trying to set up the other organisation stuff, because you put your head above the parapet and were kind of quite certain and quite vocal about the way you wanted to be, have you, because it seems to me that you've carried on that kind of assertiveness and confidence in yourself, but also you've made peace with who you are. You want everyone around you to have a good time, it looks like. You want the environment to be right. You want people to express themselves. Has that got anything to do with it? Because it seems like you've grown into that, where you're sort of a bit uncertain sometimes if you're, as yourself, you now seem to be like, I'm Ellis Genge, this is what I do. If I'm going to play, I want to play with my balls to the wall, and I want everyone to have a good time around me. Is that kind of
I think something that opened my eyes up to was that, fuck, there really ain't that many people who want to stand up for everyone in the game. And, like, I thought there was loads.
Yeah.
I thought there was loads, and then you soon find out there wasn't. So it was almost every man for himself. So I thought, fuck it, someone's got to do it. Going back 2 years or whatever. And yeah, I'd say that would probably ignited me to think, right, well, these boys obviously, they need guidance, you know, like some of these young boys who didn't want to say boo to a goose need some guidance and that. And yeah, I probably started putting my arm around people from then.
Can I ask you a couple of bits just from the Six Nations? Have you seen or spoken to Seb Negri off the back of the
Yeah, game? Once or twice. He's coming on my mate Stag in July, so I spoke to him a little bit then, yeah. He's good mates with Henry Harper from Hartbury. So
that was a lovely touch. You got a lot of, rightly so, a lot of
I didn't do it for the fucking...
No, of course you didn't.
Do you know what I mean?
But I just wondered...
You don't want to be like, oh, look at me.
No.
Seb,
I wouldn't for a moment suggest that, but it's...
People did, though. That's crazy, isn't it? People do. People do that.
Really?
People pick up it's just anything. Weird, isn't it? It's just weird.
But how are you supposed to get... How else are you supposed to get hold of him? You haven't got his number or find him? Do you know what I mean?
I didn't have his number. He just messaged me on Twitter. Yeah, I was like, cheers, mate.
Love that. Tell us about being England's running back in Paris.
Yeah, it was fun. I got whacked a few times. That Valencia, we played Montpellier in the Challenge Cup, below the Champions Cup, in the final at Twickenham once, and he absolutely murdered me in a carry. It really hurt my shoulder. So when I was running back at the line, I thought, I'm going to go straight at him. Then I remembered what happened.
there was a couple of times because we were watching in the stand. And it was like when you set off and you do a little bit of footwork that doesn't halt your full momentum, you're lethal. But it was one where you ran, did the shimmy sauce off, and an almost went off at the right angle.
Well, that was because I seen Antonio and Villemse on the right hand side on their own, and I thought I could go around these boys. Like I'm quick enough to go around them, but then Nick was in the way, and he went like this. And I thought, put your arms down, so I could go around you. But he didn't mean to. But yeah, no, I've really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it.
How the hell do you
have
run
you framed those meterage?
Yeah. I mean, that's a hell of a stat. But, yeah, I mean, but
used to think that, you know, when I seen like fullbacks and it'd be like, they've made 300 metres this game. I'm like, No, they haven't. They've caught the ball in the backfield and ran 50 five times.
Yeah.
So I got that bit of praise. But it was
but don't let the truth get away with the story.
Spice up. Yeah, I made 182 through contact.
Yeah, because you were eating up the distance until they caught up with you.
Yeah, exactly. I guess.
But you did make some, like, you did actually get
No, I made a fair few metres, but metres through contact would have been significantly lower than what
the point of statistics is.
Exactly. I had to give Hasker a statistics lesson the day after.
Because I was talking up certain things and he went, talking shit. And I'd actually caveat it by going, by the way, guys, I'm usually good about that. I might be talking absolute bollocks. And Tins is like, yeah, you are. Like, sorry about that.
You were really upset by that, actually. You wouldn't let go of it.
Yeah, because I couldn't get my head around the fact that I thought, for example, having watched the game from the stand, and this backs up my point about the fact that no one knows what they're talking about when they're in the stand, was that I thought we hadn't necessarily got over the gain line as many times as we should have done, because I felt that they were hitting us behind the gain line and we were getting pressured. But actually, the stats, according to Mike, said we got more gain line busts than them.
Yeah, probably did.
Made more metres, more carries, more dominant carries.
Yeah, but we probably carried more than them, didn't we?
Yeah.
If you were saying to say that dominant carries, getting over the gain line, when actually I saw people getting hit and then suddenly we were under pressure and run out of ideas or run out of shape, for example, and then I was proven completely wrong. And then it just goes to show that anyone in the stand, including the guys in the media, not know what they're talking about.
They probably felt that way because we gave a lot of like continuous penalties away.
Yes.
And it just put so much pressure on us and gave them so much field position. I think penalties...
588 metres to 305.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And you guess that was an observation. That's why I say it's so dangerous. Unless you know what you're talking about, don't talk.
74 game line carries to their 43.
There you go.
How do you reflect? A lot of people have a lot to say, but from those within the camp... Does it feel like it's coming? Is it slower than you wanted?
We were in this position in 2018 before the 2019 World Cup. We had our worst ever Six Nations, finished fifth, didn't we? Lost like seven games in a row or something. I can't remember how many we lost, but we lost a lot of games in a row. And we finished in the final. So, and Ireland were the same. They had their best run and then obviously didn't go too well in the World Cup. So I think... I'm not saying those boys are going to bomb out the World Cup. I'm just saying, like, it's not necessarily about peaking now. It's about peaking at the right time. I think France are on fire. I actually thought they'd drop off, but they haven't. They've maintained it. They've been brilliant. But I think for us as an England team, it's just about peaking at the right time. And I think Eddie's had enough World Cup campaigns now to know that. So when everyone's obviously giving him a load of flack from the outside, I don't think it's bothering him too much.
Was there just a little bit, would you, I don't know, I said the only thing that really was missing is what you had in the autumn was you were a bit sharper, a bit more clinical in attack. I just felt, well, was, I that, think was we that brought
were, we
up?
We were playing a brand new system in the autumn, and it was we were actually way better at it in training this time around. I think the teams that we played in the autumn, that system was probably maybe a lot more suited. Better. Yeah, I think they D up very differently in Six Nations, especially when they play England. Everyone wants to beat us. So. Yeah. Whereas in the autumns, I'm not saying teams don't want to win, but they...
You're not playing as regularly. That's
yeah.
not as,
they don't know us as well, do they? So, yeah, I'd probably say that.
Have you read any of the stuff around Eddie or not?
Yeah, I've seen a few things, been asked a few questions.
What do you make of it?
Obviously, people think I'm going to defend him regardless, but I think it's ridiculous. Some of the stuff that I've seen is mental.
One of the things, it's because he doesn't play the game that they go after him. And Stephen Jones at the moment, who you know I've always gotten very well with, is doing a Jones versus Jones thing. And he said...
Jones versus Jones? Are they boxing, are they?
Well, quite funny, actually, to see what happened. And they did some article, and it was something like... you know, his win percentage between 2016 and 17 was something like 70 or 80%, and since then it's been down to 50 or 60% or something like that. It's not as good. But I mean, if you ask the players, that's what I don't understand. No player is going to stand. I would not put the pressure on you on this podcast to say to nail your colours completely to the mast. But what I'm suspecting, what
to
I've
what?
Heard,
to what was that?
Nail the colours to your mast. So, i.e., basically say that Eddie Jones is the best thing since sliced bread. Because you're not going to say shit.
Not forcing you to say something. You don't
yeah,
want to
I want to force you to say something.
Well, I'd tell you if I did.
That's what I think he knows that,
and I think everyone else knows but I just don't think it's the case.
I believe that if you ask 90% of the players in the squad whether he was the right man for the job, they would say yes.
Yeah, but like you'd have to ask him, wouldn't you? And that's the thing.
You must pick it up. There's always people who hate him.
You know what? In like 2020, in 2020, and that, it probably did feel a bit of like because we're playing so badly. But it was us. It was us that was playing badly. You know, it wasn't him. He's not out there. And like we had a game plan, we all buy into it. We just didn't execute it very well. But that wasn't the case this Six Nations. Obviously, we had the red. Scotland game, I don't know what went wrong. They were just really good on that day, you know.
Well, you did have it didn't help with the crazy swinging momentum. You had it where you wanted it, you were in complete control. And this is what I say, if you go back to those games, that split second red card against Ireland,
that's why test match rugby is so popular, mate. Because one thing like that changes the whole dynamic. The
yellow card in the Scotland game.
I forgot about that.
When you're so comfortable, those two things don't happen. Now, obviously, they did happen.
Well, they're anomalies, though, aren't they?
Yeah, they're a complete anomaly. They don't happen. No way. Well, I would say pretty confidently you wouldn't lose that Scotland game, and then you don't, because it's happened so early in the Ireland game. You don't know what would have happened, but.
Yeah.
I think it is the frustration that Eddie can produce by the way that he deflects things around the media.
That's what you want, though, mate, as a player.
Well, exactly.
But also as a fan, you want people who write headlines for you and who get you engaged and get you talking about it and get you thinking and watching.
I do think he's probably the most divisive coach on how fans feel about him.
Yeah.
As in love or hate, Marmite.
I know a little bit about that.
Yeah, but if they win in Australia, everyone's straight back in his back.
Well,
again.
Exactly, and that's the thing that we always talk about. Look at his rate, obviously everyone was raving about the performance the boys put in against South Africa and the way that they found a way to win and come back from a difficult situation, and everything was hailing, all was great again. And then you're just talking about, we've just talked about two moments that could have completely swung for it being a Grand Slam game. And you lose, you know, you're losing a Grand Slam game to arguably a team that's on fire right now.
That's what sports like.
But then why does it need to take over the front left, but the back pages of a paper?
It is amazing. So I haven't, until this head conversation, given one thought about it since we did the thing in France. Right? Not, you know, like I want boys to do well. We're not playing international rugby at the moment. But if you still look at the papers, like I flick through because people tag me and stuff. They're still just going out, you know. I saw some Chris Jones, I really like from the Evening Standard, posting, where are they now? Stuart Lancaster and I, and Andy Farrell in thing, Mike Catt, Graham Roundtree about to be head of Munster. You know, and people underneath go, if we had that, we'd win the World Cup. It's like you had them,
yeah,
and they didn't win the World Cup. So what you, oh, but they've all learned now, so get them back in. Yeah. Oh, well, I mean,
they probably have learned, they've probably learned loads.
They have probably learned loads, but they weren't bad people, they weren't bad start with. They just didn't get it right.
They go back to the articles you were writing when they were in,
that's what I mean.
They probably weren't very very good people,
and
were they?
Like, and they'll turn around and say, and what the journalists will say was that, well, if it wasn't for us, they wouldn't have gone on the journey and learned. And you know, Stuart Lancaster wouldn't have become one of the Leinster's favourite ever coaches. And Graham Ramsay wouldn't be head of Munster. And Andy Farrell wouldn't be in charge. And Mike Catt wouldn't have had it. We built them and now we deserve to have them back until they fuck up again.
That's
and then
been said. Someone said that.
Someone said that, yeah. People are saying that kind of stuff. And you've got, you know, I mean, I always hammer every week with Clive Woodward, sort of the general demeanour about that. You know, if I was in charge, this was what I would do. And, you know, and I've said this and we need to...
He hasn't been in charge of your sport team since 2004.
But, yeah, and the best thing is, you know, Eddie Jones...
Eddie Jones talks
about rugby.
He's just commentator, is he?
Bear in mind...
No, he was coach when we...
I know he won the World Cup. Yeah,
he went to football for a bit to try and manage, not manage, but basically head of performance.
I'd like to see some football coaches come in and have a crack at rugby.
Who would you like to be coached by in football?
I met Arteta the other week.
I'd like
to... Did you?
Yeah, he wouldn't be coached by really, really good.
How did you meet him?
He came in, done a talk.
Did he?
England, yeah, it was brilliant.
Was he good?
Yeah, met Tony Pulis.
Arsenal Gash, aren't they?
Through Steve. That was brilliant. I've met loads and they're all
brilliant. I'd want Guardiola
or Klopp. Characters.
Do they speak well?
Yes.
I saw that
Arteta was very impressive.
Isn't Arsenal rubbish?
No, they're fourth, aren't they?
Are they? But they're always fourth. Yeah. that's the eternal joke.
Are they fifth?
What does Arteta give you that you think...
That I liked?
Yeah.
I liked that he had an appreciation. So he said that he was really impressed with how, like, everyone was always touching each other, encouraging each other, that we listened in the huddle. So say Hask wanted to say something about defence, that we all would look at him, listen, take it on board, boom, go away and execute it. Yeah. But I'd like to see a established football coach, I don't know, Mourinho, or he's not going to come for what the wages would be in rugby, but I'd like to see someone like that come into rugby and be given, because obviously we're reasonably polite. We're very easy to coach. Whereas footballers, all you hear is like so talented, but they just don't.
But that is such an interesting point. Imagine,
I'd love to see what they could do.
Imagine coming from an elite sport, so an actual professional sport. Rugby's been professional for a while. We don't say it's professional, it should be. That level of competency, professionalism, and actually all the ideas they've got, delivering it to an audience is actually interesting.
That actually is interesting. It goes, okay, I'll go do that.
And none of them are just going to walk off if you say they're shit. No one's going to go, oh, I'm going to speak to my agent, move club halfway through, or have discussions with the media.
I mean.
I've never thought about that. That might actually be the best.
But they've got to understand the game.
We don't understand the game.
No, but...
Got enough problems with kicking as it is.
As long as he's got the coaches underneath him, if he can manage the players.
Some good assistant coaches. But at the same time, like they... Because obviously they learn so much about football and they love the sport. If they were putting all their eggs into it, they're such good coaches because they learn about how rugby should be played, they'd probably find a new way to coach it and a new way to play it.
Yeah.
I always think with the NFL stuff, like I see like they run all the routes, and they run all the routes and stuff and the footwork off the ball and I think, I don't know why we never do it in rugby, you know? Like, who's the one at Wasps Centre, 13, played for New Zealand, came over as a Fekitoa?
Malachi Fekitoa, yeah.
Like, I remember watching him once and he like ran at the line and then done like a jump step before he got the ball and went boom and then went straight for fingers against Leicester actually. And I thought, geez, like, how do you defend that? Like, he's stepped already without the ball in his hand and like no one knows where he's going to go and then boom, they must have put the ball on a plate for him because he's been doing that and training all week and went
through. Well, that's what Danny Cipriani used to try to do with the players.
Put the ball where you're going to go through as opposed to
But also talk about, and actually Sam Burgess, I tell you what was really interesting about rugby league stuff, was doing some defence against Sam and, you know, the ability for them to hide out of your view,
vision.
But also for them to change on the ball. So they try to make it, but we never
that's
do
that's what I've been trying to do lately. It's hard to catch.
Steve Borthwick did a lot of that. That's why Courtney, if you look at the way Courtney played, before that Lions tour, he was just hitting his kind of straps. But actually on that Lions tour, he spent a load of time working on the post, moving last minute of the ball. And now you see he's become such a good stepper.
His first few times, you spaff it every single time. It's like, boom, trying to catch it when you're moving. Yeah. But when you get into the rhythm, and if you've got like a 9 or a 10 who can read you, like 40 and me at the moment are working on it a lot in training is going well. You don't get as many opportunities in the game, obviously.
But I will say Sippy, for all these things, one of the things he always hammered was that attention to detail, the expectation of how your body shape should look at the line, where he wanted to put the ball. And if you had a 10 that can actually play those skills, it's impossible to defend, to make a decision.
There's no doubt in Sips was orchestrating a pass like that. He's one of the best to ever do it.
Yeah.
That was my final question on England. Is there a sort of a bigger plan? I mean, it's interesting you say you're changing systems in November.
Yeah, get Borthwick, Lancaster and the guys
not
back.
Not so much that, but in terms of, do you feel you are on a journey to something that paying punters aren't necessarily seeing the whole of at the moment?
Yeah, to win the World Cup.
Love it.
Will you retire after the winning the World Cup and go on an open top bus tour around Bristol?
I don't know about retire, but I wouldn't mind like exploring other things.
Like?
By the sounds of it, France.
No. I'd like to maybe, if possible, go on the Lions tour before that. But I don't know. I'd like when you've done the Bellator stuff, I'd really like to have it. I know, but you were 36 and had dust come out your pecs. So I'd like to, but I'd be 29, yeah. 29 turning 30 then. So I'd like to give that a crack.
Have you genuinely got the hunger?
Yeah. He's always had hunger. He's been talking about it since I started. He wanted to come down.
I love it.
And you find out you got a glass jaw.
I've got a fucking granite jaw. That's one thing I've got.
Is there room on the War of Wandsworth card?
Do you want a little go next Thursday?
What about your old feather mitts? You going to be all right with that?
Well, that's the thing. I can't beat anyone up. I can't get knocked out. Go three rounds.
Homer,
yeah.
So tired. The champ's really tired.
Yeah, I'd like to do that. I wouldn't mind, I don't know, like giving the NRL a crack at one stage, maybe. Over to Australia, I'd like to give League a crack. Only because like I've been seeing, I don't know, Sonny Bill did it with the boxing and stuff, Quay Cooper did it, and all these other boys. I've seen one of the Aussie League boys, that Bam Bam Tuivasa. Have you seen him, the UFC boy? Yeah. Like, he was playing NRL until 20, I think it was, and then made the switch. But he was like a hero in the age grades. And this ain't me saying I'm going to do it. These are just things that I've thought about. I'd love to give him a crack.
What about movies?
Films, yeah. I ain't good looking enough for that.
I think you are. I think, you know, at the time you posted that picture of you and the budgie smugglers, look like, who is it you look like? You know as well.
Bag of sick.
No. You're like, you look, I mean, a bit like Sexy Beast, Ray Winston. No.
Oh, what a film. What a film.
Sexy Beast.
What a film.
No. Have you seen that?
No.
Mate, Sexy Beast. LOL, every bus journey away game, you just be like... Right, then, got Sexy Beast. Right. No, we've seen it every other week. Put it on. It's
Everyone's loving it.
No. Ben Kingsley.
And Ray Winston.
Mate, he's amazing. I love Ian McShane.
You've got to watch that, Tins. Brilliant film.
Genius. You wore the Cobra Budgie Smugglers and you look a million. You looked fantastic. And I thought maybe you got a bit of a model-y sort of.
Maybe.
Hired man, you know, doorman number three.
I'd like, whatever.
Vinnie Jones can do it.
Film, yeah. I got an A at school for drama.
Did you?
Yeah.
What did you do?
Did Ugly Stepsister in Cinderella, which was one because she said, look, you've done all these other roles, which are real natural to you. I need to see if you can do something else. And I did it. I got a B for that, though. Right. And then I got an A for one called School or something. And then there was one more. But we had to do our own play then. But yeah, I got an A.
You know, I've always wanted
to do pantomime. The written let me down. I got a B in the written and an A... star in the acting.
I think so. You and I should do pantomime.
I don't like panto, mate.
Do not.
He's behind you.
No, he ain't.
You ain't fooling me, yeah. Bab.
What about the drink we came up with? Rhubarb on it.
Rhubarb on it.
I said, do you like gin? Because we love our gin on this show. And he went, here, if he ain't got rhubarb, I'm not interested. So we got, he went, rhubarb. Right, is the name. And then if we change it, rhubarb and tonic, rhubarb and on it. If it a company wants to launch a rhubarb and on it, I'll take, well, you'll take 5% for the idea. I'll take 5% because I'm your mate, and we'll go from there.
We'll work on it.
Best role in the school play you ever had?
I was Knuckles.
Of course you
were.
Were
you?
Yeah.
Oh, what a play.
Yeah, straight play that.
You?
I was, Pygmalion. I was Elijah's father. Sold her off for the elocution lesson.
I don't know Pygmalion.
You don't know it? No, it's basically a girl that talks, oh, actually, yeah, a London version of you, talks, oh, right, Gavner. And these two people basically think that they can teach
the rain in
proper
Spain,
English,
yeah,
and make a pass as a thing. And I'm a dirty old dad who just sells her off. And then I played someone in some utopian thing, and I think I was like,
"What?" I was going to say, "What Shakespeare play have you, did you
no,
do?"
I was the washerwoman in Wind in the Willows.
Really?
Almost fell down the stairs carrying my washing. That was the end of it.
I was the demon headmaster in one thing. I can't remember what that was.
My brother was the Artful Dodger in Oliver Twist, and
Pick a Pocket or Two.
Yeah, and then in one of the live shows where Bill Sykes gives. Thingy a backhander, he actually gave him a backhander and like knocked the bloke out on the floor.
Really?
Where the acting's gone bad.
Yeah. My acting's gone bad. We are running out of time. Can we have a quick cheer, please, for the Red Roses?
Yes.
23-0. Scars scoring more tries for fun. France coming up 3-3 as well. Well done, Ireland, who got their first win in the Six Nations. They're in fourth. Italy, bottom at the moment. Simon Middleton's team are something else. Do you have anything to do? Do you have a cross paths swap?
Yeah, I've seen them not long ago. In Chelsea.
Oh,
we had that fallow week, yeah. We had a commercial thing together with a few of them.
Did you?
Catch up, yeah. I think there's a lot of, obviously same sport, but it was very different, isn't it?
Yeah.
The areas of the game that they focus on compared to where we probably put all of our emphasis into set piece and strike plays and stuff. They're very much so on, it's just different games, isn't it?
Yeah.
But no, we talk when we see them, but like, no, there's not much crossover in terms of like, we don't do much together.
No.
We don't do much together now.
I said that's one thing should have changed. Should, I think. Yeah.
Do you think that should change?
Yeah, maybe even just some training stuff or what's a bit.
Because they're based up at Marlow, aren't they? Where are they? Where do they base this?
I thought they were at Lansbury.
Yeah, I thought they were Lansbury.
Or Bisham Abbey.
Bisham Abbey,
they've done some stuff there.
They were at the England football thing the other week. What's that called?
St George's.
St George's. Yeah. They were there.
But yeah, they should do a bit more.
I went into the England under 21s. They lost after I came in for a chat.
Football?
No. Rugby.
England 20s, whatever they were.
That probably helps. Helps I knew I was
when
talking
do
I, to. I went and talked to a bunch of lads. I think they were England 20s. They could have just been a group of teenagers. I've set them back by 10 years, unfortunately.
You're doing good, Skaz, this week, actually. There was a brilliant episode last week with Elmer, Mo Hunt and Skaz, live from the team hotel. So if you haven't listened to that, it was very, very funny. A lot of carnage going on. France, England, Grand Slam showdown.
Is it for the Grand Slam?
Well, there's one to go, but I can't see any way that...
They've still got Ireland. They've got Ireland, but Ireland aren't really there.
They're coming up, but not there yet.
Haven't got their professional contracts in place or anything like that at the moment, so I can't see them being stumbled up. Then it will be...
England playing Ireland.
England play Ireland next. It followed the same schedule as the men. But then they're in Bayonne to play France. Maybe 15,000 they're talking about.
Yeah,
it's nice. They got a big turnout.
Yeah, they did.
It was a record crowd at King's Home. So, look, everything's going in the right direction. Obviously, the girls are on a different level. I mean, he's in a great place where Middleton can change the team quite consistently. Yeah. You know, he's played three different nines. He's been able to put Skaz on the bench for one game. He'll probably change it again.
She threw a mental pass when she came on this week, didn't she?
Yeah.
Was she on the bench this week?
Yes.
She threw a mental pass of her left hand. Have you seen it?
No.
Fair play to her.
And they've scored 31 tries in three games.
Really?
Van in the sun.
Yeah.
Does that not show you, though, the difference in levels and competition with...
Yeah,
I'm not taking anything away from 23-0. That's incredible. What an achievement.
Yeah. Well, what it says is you've got to get the other teams professional as quickly as you can.
Exactly.
England are setting the benchmark. You can't beat them for that.
Yeah. I'm sure the girls don't even really enjoy that.
Yeah.
Surely they want a bit of competition.
Yeah. I agree, yeah. But the good thing is about what the girls do is they support the other, even because the other girls all play in the Allianz Premier 15, so they're all their friends and they all sort of support them. But they see, you know, with what Wales have done in having those few they've got 12 contracts, 11 retainers, makes a difference. And but everyone needs to get on board with it, don't they?
How'd you do that?
It's cash in it, man. Look, I think it's a responsibility of the unions. I don't think there's any reason that Ireland can't do it with the way that their structure is. Obviously, Scotland is not as cash rich in their player pool, so it might be trickier, but there's got to be supporters out there.
They're serious about it than they should. Otherwise, I don't think it's fair.
Well, I agree.
You look at 14,000 at the crowd this weekend, record amount of crowd. People are coming. Whereas before, you know, if you talk to Skaz and some of the other girls on the shows, you know, the idea of getting more than 1,000 at some point, having anyone tune in was a pipe dream. So the evolution is
it's getting there. Isn't it?
Getting there. Yeah. For 14,000 people, I think the more, you know, as I said, I think when you look at the crowd and you see Skaz standing there getting a photograph with a girl who's now got an aspirational person to see one of her heroes play in front of 14,000 people on a 23 winning streak, playing some great rugby, just shows where things can go. And I think, unfortunately, it's always about money. But until you start building profiles, encouraging companies to come in, you know, create a spectacle that people want to watch, you know, up the health, the fitness and conditioning, up the, you know, the strength conditioning, et cetera, and all the rest
of it. But you do that with professional contracts,
exactly.
Right, before we move on, obviously, can we get an update?
On
9 days to go.
No, oh, yeah. Just before we do that, get well Abby Dow, who's broken her leg. And good luck, Skaz, who's going to route for 100th cap next time she takes the field. So well done to our girl.
Yeah, it's mega.
Just before we do that as well, I also very quickly just wanted, the desperately sad news around Tom Smith.
Yeah.
And we chatted to him a couple of years ago. I mean, just about the most inspiring interview we've done, funnily enough, with a guy who sort of achieved so much in the game without necessarily ever having a huge number of headlines written about him, but the outpouring of love and respect and just some extraordinary stories that have come out, some really, really lovely lines, just very, very simple from Saria McGeeken, who said that in Tom Smith, not only has rugby lost one of its finest players, but also one of its greatest men. Pound for pound, there was no one tougher than Smith. He must rank as Scotland's greatest prop of the professional era, if not all time. Jim Telfer, Tom was exceptional. My kind of player, no fear, no bother. Keith Wood, he was magnificent. Martin Johnson, hell of a player. That's sort of all you need to know, really. When we interviewed him, it was extraordinarily uplifting for a man in the situation that he was. But, often it's awful to sort of hear the things after the moment has passed, and he has passed. But, it's hard to know really what the question is, other than just an amazing man, an amazing player.
Yeah, look, I think, first of all, an incredible player and what he did. He always did it with such kind of style and aplomb. Was incredible. He was so quiet and so unassuming. That's what everyone always says about him, but he was an incredible kind of team man. And actually, when you're faced with that challenge that he had, and we obviously talked to him about it and kind of his situation and how hard he tried and was continuously fighting against an awful disease that takes people, all the time. It was kind of really inspirational. It was actually quite sad for me because I'd obviously that 97 Lions and all the kind of stuff that had gone with it and watching him play, I'd always kind of wanted to get to know him, meet him. I'd never really had that opportunity. And I got put into like a former Saints players group. And obviously everyone was kind of an outpouring, used to be his teammates in there. It was really interesting. I read this article that someone put in. I don't know where it's come from, but it said Tom Smith was way too small to do what he did. He was 5'10". And 16 stone, which by the standards of international rugby props is somewhere between diminutive and Lilliputian. Putting him in the Scotland side to face England in 1997 was a surprise to many. Taking him to South Africa with the Lions that summer was a bona fide shock. South Africa is the land of the scrum, a vast Afrikaner farmers who test their manhood by tackling wildebeest at full pelt. Half pint Scottish props would be breakfast, lunch and dinner for these guys, except no one told Tom that. In a world of bravado and tough talk, his waters ran silent and deep. One of the first things the Lions did, even before leaving the UK, was a team building course. And with one of the disciplines was to see how many crates you could stand on before falling off. Each man was roped and harnessed for safety, and they had to build the stack beneath them as it rose higher and higher. Some of these big, hard rugby players couldn't make it beyond half a dozen. Tom managed 35. He didn't say a word. He just did it. He went to South Africa effectively as a backup for Jason Leonard. No one picking the Lions side before they left Heathrow would have given Tom the chance of the starting 15. Even the captain, Martin Johnson, said, "I didn't know him from a hole in the head before the tour, but the coaches Ian McGeeken and Jim Telfer promised that everyone would be considered on form rather than reputation. And they were as good as they were. Tom was playing better than anyone else in his position, so he got the nod for the first test. And Leonard, who understood the Lions' ethos perfectly, did all he could to help Tom prepare." And if that doesn't kind of tell you about the bloke and the story and the way he was, and like there's some amazing stories. I think Jason Leonard talks about sharing rooms with him and like waking up and Tom Smith staring at him. Like
worst sleepwalker ever.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. Like a serial killer, like waking up over him. And just, but that character, and I think it summed it up in that interview. Like he's a fighter, he's got an amazing family, he tried his best. And unfortunately, this horrible disease that takes so many took him, but he's a hero of the game, and it's a real shame. Again, it always these moments makes you value what you have at 50 or 52, whatever it was, how precious life is. You've got to live it to the full. You've got to appreciate this moment. You have to stop sometimes and smell the grass. You have to tell someone that you love them, tell someone that you liked them, tell someone that they did good, because you never know when it might be the last time you see them.
Good on you. I hope you'll forgive us for doing this, but it was, as we've mentioned, our pleasure to speak to Tom at the RPA Awards in 2020. He spoke very candidly about his treatment for cancer, and we just wanted to pop some of this in to hopefully inspire and raise a smile.
After the initial shock, you have a choice, and tried to be positive, and the chemo was pretty brutal at the start, but they toned it down after about February, March. They calmed down a little bit and they took a few things off that were causing quite big side effects, so I started to get my life back. So
good.
I've got three kids, so there's that side of things as well, so you don't just get to mope around and feel sorry for yourself.
I was going to say, how good a distraction have they been?
Yeah, it's been, obviously we did lockdown together, so that was it was quite nice putting them to work. They're old enough to work now, so
good. I was about to say, you're the only parent I can recall actually saying they enjoyed lockdown with their kids. Most people we talk to, like Jack Knoll, we interviewed for a podcast, he's got a gym at the bottom of the garden, and his wife couldn't understand why he was working out for 12 hours a day.
It's a bit like chemo. You look back and you don't remember it so badly. It's like my knees didn't hurt after games, and my back wasn't too sore, and you forget all the bad times. And lockdown was actually. It's actually probably the last chance. The kids have gone off to, the two older ones have gone off to uni. So it was kind of our last chance to spend some time together. It was nice. There were definitely moments.
Have you had a bit of a reminisce on the career as well? I mean, it was such a glorious career, Tom, and you are one of Scotland's greatest and a Lion too, you know, one of the greats, having been involved in 97 and 2001. Have you had a chance to reflect on what you achieved in your boots?
I have to be honest, you know, I didn't win that much as a player. I think
last Scottish Six Nations Five Nations champion as it was. I mean, that's, you know, I think most people north of the border would take that right now.
Yeah, no, that was a good one, and it's a good one because nobody can take that off us. It's given us more of an opportunity to kind of reflect on the friendships that we have in rugby, catching up with old friends and old colleagues, and it was quite humbling that so many people, you know, came out for me, and it was just nice to see such a, you know, these guys I've not seen for some of them, you know, 20 odd years. You know, the Geech made that speech in the 97's Lions that you'll see each other. It may be in 10 years or 20 years time, but you'll remember. And it's very true. You know, maybe it occasionally takes events or situations like this to make you appreciate it.
So that was Tom Smith speaking to us at the 2020 RPA Awards. And obviously at this very sad time, our thoughts go out to his family and his friends. We will be raising a glass to Tom Smith on our latest British and Irish Lions stop in partnership with Vodafone. We are teeing up as part of their grassroots club's return to rugby because we know all too well how difficult the last couple of years have been. And over the last 6 months on Vodafone's Lions Legacy Tour, we have visited Westbury, Dungannon and Bannockburn, and we've got one more to go. We're off to Aberdeer in South Wales, which is a Canterbury Lions origin club, meaning it's bred a Lions player or two. We were actually meant to be going in January, and then COVID got in the way in February, and then Storm Eunice got in the way. So we are very pleased to finally be making the trip across the bridge on Saturday, the 23rd of April. On the day, we're going to be putting the Aberdeer Minis through their paces, running a few warm-ups and team talks, and there'll be a big old live show in the clubhouse in the evening. Some big names joining us to help on the day as well. It is all set to be a bumper day, and if you're in the area, in and around Aberdeer, we would love to see you there. Vodafone are also going to be providing tech support and digital education to Aberdeer as a club, financial sustainability, and to help with their online presence as well, which we all know is a real biggie, as we said, after the last couple of fairly difficult years. And the cherry on top of all of this, thank you to Canterbury, who are going to provide kit for the club as well. Looking forward to our final stop on the 23rd of April. If you're in and around Aberdeer, we would love to see you there. And we will be raising a glass to the great Tom Smith as well. 9 days to go. Are you able to come next Thursday or not? I pinged you a note about it. My walk
fight.
On fight night. Yeah, you may well be getting ready for Quinn's, which is a slightly bigger deal.
No, I can come, yeah.
You'll get the juices flowing.
Yeah, I'll come.
For your UFC. Okay, I'll ping some details. Odds, scores on the doors. We've got tickets available.
Why are you laughing? Why are you laughing?
Like, literally. You've missed him, haven't you?
I love him so much. Like, I just don't get to spend any time with him. But it feels like he's like a bit like an oyster. You have to open the shell a bit, scrape away to get back in there because he closes back up again.
And suck him out.
Yeah.
Well, not now with that, what you've been saving up.
Thursday the 21st of April at Wandsworth Town Hall. It is the big fight between yours truly and Archie Curzon. I've actually been training quite hard, but I've tweaked my back and got a hairline fracture in my thumb. But that is no excuse.
I sounded like an excuse to me.
Thumb ain't a problem.
No.
The back might be a problem.
Yeah, the back's a bit of an issue.
Sauna, steam.
Load of tramadol. Go out there and bash him.
30 quid tickets available, apparently. He's still goading me, even 9 days out. Payno 30 gets you a £30 ticket at fixer.co if you'd like to come along. We've got some big names coming. You're going to do the auction. We've got quite a lot of VIPs in the room as well. You three are going to be my walk-on girls.
Yeah.
Let's get into it. 3 rounds, 2 minutes. Where's your money? You went on his pod, didn't you?
Yeah, he's begging me for ages.
Right. He'll be begging me on Thursday.
Just to finish him. Yeah. Kill me.
I seen he posted to you yesterday, didn't he? What did he say? Something about nonsense. 9 days to put you to sleep. And yeah. you that was quite funny from you.
What did you say about it?
I said, with your chat.
He's so good. Never taken Alex. I honestly, Archie was like mortified that I'd say that. Alex is going to batter him. 100%.
Are you much taller than him? You're quite tall.
I'm a little bit taller.
Yeah. I mean, also, he's got
42.
He's also got, you've got a vicious streak of mile wide behind that soppy git exterior. Relax.
A good big one always beats a good little one. Remember that.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Bigger they are, the harder they fall.
Nine times out of ten.
My walk on music is epic.
I know, I've heard it.
What you got?
It is epic. It's can I reveal? You've got to wait for the night.
Yeah.
I've done a little bit of mixing.
Oh, I really want to know.
Yeah, I'll play it to you afterwards. Anything in the diary that's interesting?
Bit of tour PR. Getting on the shooting days.
Getting on the shooting days. We've got those going as well.
You like shooting with the Mega One at EJ Church. Got one in High Wycombe at Honours for shooting.
Goodbadrugby.com for details of that if you want to come play there.
What's on this week? Wife's competing down in Norfolk. So.
Oh, is she?
I'm DJing Friday night in Warwick.
Are you?
Ronnie's Bar. Nice.
Good luck. Is sold out on Saturday? You Saturday?
Not yet, I don't think. But yeah, it will be.
Good.
It will be, yeah.
Finish the job.
Can I get a ticket one day? Come and watch it.
Come whenever you want. Yeah.
Can we come as a trio? And sort of
come whenever you want.
Yeah.
Can I get a shirt with Ellis on the back of it?
Yeah. Gendry or Ellis?
Gendry.
Yeah. Up to you. Yeah, no, come whenever you want.
We should do that.
We should actually do that.
A little day at the at Welford Road. What's it called? The Matoli Woods.
I've got a certain I want to speak about. What about Benno's Arlequins thing he's done?
Oh, what's that?
Have you seen that?
No.
He's made like a
premiere. I actually got invited to the premiere.
All or Nothing, basically. But for Quins. And it's like
Benno Barno
followed
has.
The year they won the Prem.
I did not know that.
I didn't know that either.
Wait, is it out?
It's a premiere. It's a premiere. This week, I think.
I'll forward you the thing and I'll text Benno see if you can get it.
We'd love to have him on.
Is he still playing? Is he retired?
Ben? He's just resigned for Bath.
He's just resigned.
How's he doing all that? How's he getting filmed?
Because he'd done his knee, so he had loads of time.
Oh, right. Because I wondered about that.
But it's an Amazon one, yeah. It's called...
I did not know that.
Something pressure.
I literally got an invite. I can't go to it. We're doing something. But
there's another very good one that's come out called No Woman, No Try,
yeah.
Which is on Amazon as well.
Yeah.
With Victoria Rush.
What's the thing about...
Prep to Win, Harlequins.
And it's the story of their Prem winning season.
Yeah.
Oh my God, is going to be insane.
He didn't know they were going to win the Prem though. He followed them from the beginning, like when they...
Does he do? What is actually Benno doing there?
He's the director or producer.
Has he got good skills for it? Is he actually
he's brilliant, mate.
Really?
Done one with me, yeah, he's brilliant.
I've watched that one.
Yeah, he was brilliant.
Really? Love that.
He's just got a real good eye for it, like the art side of it. Like,
good boy. Is he related to Maro? Have I made that up?
They are
cousins, aren't they? Prep to Win. Out now? Out soon.
I don't know, just
coming soon.
Fair play, Benno Barno. I love that.
I love that opening up the world of rugby to other things. Like you see Maz in Miami with DJ Khaled.
Yeah.
I saw that.
Just so good for the sport.
Yeah.
Do you know rugby? That's class, mate. Don't get jealous.
I am jealous. I will be jealous.
He's at Warwick Student Union DJing on Tuesday night, opening up the game.
I'm slipping up the floor WKD. It's actually not with zero cash and no future. I work with YouTube Bellin and the lovely Ernst Genge. So.
Thank you very much for coming down.
That's
very nice to see you. And just loving watching you work at the moment. Mega. Good luck this coming weekend. We've been the Good, the Bad, and the Rugby. See you next week. This show is produced by Shara Kilgallen and Ant D'Angelo. The Good, the Bad, and the Rugby is a Folding Pocket production. See you next week.
Thank you so much for listening to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. It can't have been easy.